Greetings, listeners, and welcome to another episode of The Story Never Ends, the podcast where we reread our favorite books and watch their adaptations. I'm Audrey.
And I'm Tinashe.
And we're continuing our discussion of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, the book. So really now on to chapter 12. We were last discussing the events of chapter 11, namely Hagrid and, you know, his desire to have the trio join him for, what is it, care of magical creatures?
Yes, care of magical creatures.
And obviously they don't want anything to do with that, and there was a few events in that. But now we're just continuing on to chapter 12.
You can go ahead, Audrey.
I'm just trying to just get my bearings a little bit. So this one is key because that's when Draco kind of executes his first plan to kill Dumbledore. So we have a lot going on in terms of, I mean, in my mind is the image stuck from the film trailer where Katie Bell's body is like floating and she's kind of like screaming like, ah, whatever.
That was an awesome scene.
Yes, that was really good.
Yeah.
So this is really him trying to, we're now seeing the work he's trying to put in to try to get the package to get to Dumbledore kind of thing, and showing how much of, I guess, a coward he is, and obviously how scared he is, and he's trying to find ingenious ways, but obviously they're being thwarted somewhere. So yeah, that this is, I don't know what other thoughts you have.
Yeah, why would you say it was a cowardly way to go about it?
I think
there's no way he's gonna go and show up to Dumbledore's office and try to kill him. Like Draco being, he's gonna have to find, like, you know, subtle as he can, but he's gonna have to find other ways to weaken him at the very least.
No, that is true.
Yeah.
I mean, mind you, I like that you're defending Draco this. Because for me, Deathly Hallows Draco is not really my favorite, because obviously I'm still thinking of how he's like, what do you call it, mean to Hermione, and people like to romanticize that, but I don't think that's really something to romanticize. But actually, no, I should say pre-Half-Blood Prince, because this is when he kind of starts getting the persona, which people start sort of saying, oh, he can be redeemed or whatever because of what he goes through. I think it may be coward is not the right word to use, but I think it's just more so he's so desperate. He's so desperate to save his family
that
he kind of like, gets to use these methods that aren't very effective. So it's a bit sad to see that. I think, yeah, it's just sad. That's all.
For me, it was more so like when after Katie touches the necklace, and you know she gets cursed and all that, and then I was talking to McGonagall. And prior to going to McGonagall, Harry tells Hermione and Ron about his suspicions again that Draco was involved in this. And my boy is starting to sound crazy. I know he's right. So that he says to Hermione and Ron, Malfoy knows about this necklace. It was in the case, a broken in Bex 4 years ago. And I'm like, him remembering the necklace from 4 years ago and actually making points when presenting his suspicions about Draco, but sounding crazy. But to us as an audience, we know that he's right. So there's a part where that part, and then Ron and Hermione are like, no, Harry, it's a big leap to make that connection, you know. So when they go to McGonagall, and you know, McGonagall is like asking what happened, and Harry puts in his suspicion that, you know, I think Draco Malfoy gave Katie the necklace. On one side of him, Ron rubbed his nose in apparent embarrassment. On the other side, Hermione shuffled her feet as though quite keen to put a distance between herself and Harry.
Unfortunately, Harry does get.
I'm like, even his friends are like, we don't know this good dude.
I think for me, at the end of the day, I do like, because yes, we know as the audience, we're obviously just as frustrated as Harry is that no one else is seeing what he's seeing. But there is sense in what like Ron or Hermione were trying to say, to be like, that wouldn't be the case, because
absolutely,
on it's the a face leap. Of it, it's just such a leap. But hey, Harry's yes. upset. Like, what I love is his actual obsession now with the Half-Blood Prince book, and he's becoming yes. almost like Hermione in studying it and learning. Obviously, yes. we get references to some of the spells. I think Sectum Sempra even gets mentioned or something
yeah,
in this chapter.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's going to be very big consequence wise as we go towards the end of the book. So he's just becoming very very
he's obsessive obsessed. This year in school. Yeah,
definitely. And also I love that he thinks that the Half-Blood Prince is a better teacher than Snape, not knowing that Snape is
I actually say, like, I'm with Hermione on this, that Harry trying spells from the Half-Blood Prince yes. book, right, is crazy.
Yes.
Using the potion instructions was one thing, right? A potion is contained exactly. in the, unless you're brewing like a like an explosive or something, right? But trying out the spells without knowing what they do, without even doing any research whatsoever, I'm like, that is wild. The irony, though, that Hermione is jealous assumptions of what this prince person is like are correct, and Harry even dismisses the notion that the prince could have been a Death Eater. He's up in arms defending the prince, aka Snape, and he's going to be sick when he finds out later. I can't wait.
Oh my god. I know. Yeah, it's just a weird coincidence, really, which is a smart, weird coincidence. But I do love some little tidbits from the book. I think there's mentions of like Hermione inviting Ginny to Hogsmeade as well. And obviously, ooh, yes. Harry is annoyed at that because he's starting to grow feelings for his not so sister.
Yeah. I have like a long paragraph on that and I have to read it. But you say what you want to say.
That's all I wanted to say. Just say like,
I'm surprised. More, it's you.
No, it's like, because there are references to them hanging out at practice and he's obviously mentioning her, and it shows how he's now viewing her in a different light anyway. So he's obviously looking at her now like, oh, okay, she's an interesting female figure in my life, which is weird. But I did mention something just before you go on. I did mention something about Mundungus's mirror, but you can go on about the Ginny point. I just wanted to make sure it might trigger your memory when you finish that.
So this is like it's long, and I'm just going to say it the way I wrote it.
Is this a rant or something?
it started out as one, but then it didn't end up that way. So I say, Harry being upset that they didn't meet up with Ginny whilst on the Hogsmeade visit because, and I quote, undoubtedly thought Harry because she and Dean were closely closeted in Madame Potterfoot's tea shop, that haunt for happy couples. Scowling, he bowed his head against the swirling slit and trashed on. So I get what JK is trying to do, but it feels like all these feelings are coming out of nowhere. We barely get to see them interact for more than a few words. It feels like everything significant is happening off screen. And I'm becoming one of those people who wants everything on screen for some reason. And I even started writing what I thought were the most significant bonding moments in their lives. And I'm like, okay, maybe I do kind of see it. So listing the ones I can recall, experience with Riddle and his diary in book 2, the library interaction in book 4 when Harry was being treated like a pariah for when most of the student population and Ron believed Harry had cheated his way into the Triwizard tournament. They do become more of friends in book 5 instead of Harry just viewing her as Ron's little sister. And then from Ginny defending Harry, being part of the DA together, Ginny helping him to find a way to communicate with Sirius. And now in book six, Ginny checking him about listening and following the instructions in the Half-Blood Prince book due to their shared experience in the Chamber of Secrets that I've already mentioned. But it always feels like it's Ginny. And I do believe that she still likes Harry, but also she's moved on and views Harry as a friend. But also sometimes it just feels one-sided.
Yeah. Yep.
But I can kind of see where JK was going with this. I'm not so opposed to the coupling, the ship that is, what are they called? Hini?
Yep. The one true pairing. I was actually going to say, so because you said that there is an, I think I've mentioned this before when I said when we start reading Half-Blood Prince, I will introduce you to this article. So I'll actually send it to you most likely towards the end of Her Blood Prince. You can read it, but you can even read it now. The reason why I'm sending it to you is because it lists why Harry and Ginny, for example, belong together. Obviously, this is an argument. So obviously, someone is going to highlight the points they think are valid. And some of those points you actually put in terms of their interactions as to what might build their relationship are very valid. But I actually want to speak to your point of saying there is a problem, I think, with JK telling instead of showing a lot about this chapter. And I feel that frustration, especially when we get towards the end. You're up to whatever chapter you're up to at the moment. For me, I'm a little bit ahead. So I've read enough about their relationship now when that moment happens, when they actually get together, where I'm like, what? That's it? Like, you're just taking, like, they're not even in a relationship for more than 6 months. And 6 months, I'm even stretching so that I don't spoil it for those that might not, whoever's reading this in real time with us might not be up to there. But it's not a lot of time. So it's not a lot of time to ground. And that's where I can see the people that might say Hermione's more, you know, the person he should be with or whatever, because we see more interactions of him with her as a female figure in his life.
Yes.
So I can see why people would say they would have more time to bond, which makes sense. But in JK, that's not obviously what's in the book. We're working with canon, and in canon it's Ginny. But how do you justify why Ginny is with him? There is not that many interactions, which is sad, because I think maybe JK was trying to balance the book not becoming like a teen romance type thing.
More about the adventure. But I think
she could have, because this book is shorter than Order of the Phoenix. She could have just added an extra 50 pages just to detail some of the interactions that Harry might have with Ginny, for example, to give us that extra bit. But that's us now being, what do you call it, retrospective,
whatever. Yes.
Yeah, with looking at hindsight and being like, oh, you know, this could have been what happened. But maybe at the time her publisher might have been like, no, it's not really, you know, common to be having, or not common, but maybe she was trying to dissuade her from having too much of the teen stuff to take away from the key bits, which already a lot of people say this is like the most teenagey of the books, because it doesn't have as much drama in terms of Voldemort.
Well, even though it's a children's book, the children are growing with the characters.
Exactly, like, exactly.
The audience reading the book is growing with the characters. So for the teenage romance to start, like, it makes sense. Mm-hmm. But I was thinking, like, just linking it with Korean drama, I mean, I used to be, like, into the real, like, you know, the romance, like, hardcore romance Korean dramas. But now I find that I now enjoy, like, the stories where romance is not the focal point of the story.
Yeah.
It is, like, a side. it's like an added, like, you know, I don't know, sweetness to it, but it's not the torso focus, and I enjoy those stories now. But in this book, with her putting Harry and Ginny together, I think I wanted a little bit more. Yeah.
Yes.
Especially you said, I ask you this every time, but it's written from Harry's type of a kind of point of view. So therefore you think you would see the interactions, more of his interactions with Ginny. Yeah.
That is the thing. And I think I found the essay. I would definitely send it to you. I'm just trying to figure it, because I wanted to tell it to people, but I wouldn't want to tell people the wrong thing. I'm curious. But there used to be like a blog, I guess, or a fan fiction site. Because the thing is, Harry and Ginny, if you really dig deep into the Harry Potter fan fiction world, it is a lot. Like, they've got so much stuff that they talk about in terms, I mean, so many sites that branch off fanfiction.net. On fanfiction.net, I believe Harry Potter is still one of the top fan fiction.
Yeah, I think things. So. Yeah.
Yep. And then off that, it has like Sink in Your Eyes, Sugar Quill, all these things that are actually for Harry and Ginny alone as a couple. So people there is definitely a following. But it did take me some time as well. Once I started sort of hearing, oh, people say, oh, they didn't think they would be together, that I was like, oh, yeah, that's because even for me, I had only gotten introduced into Harry Potter through books, I mean, through films. So then by the time I got into the books, I was like, oh, he ends up with Ginny or something. But that was because I had read, and I mean, I'd only consumed the films, but anyway, not to go on, but so I do see where people might be like, it doesn't really make sense, but it's canon, so we just have to work with them. And that's why I think maybe I might not be as like teenage me loved them, but older me is more like the obviously, as you know, the Dremaini side of things, where
the more complex shape,
because I think like it gives me more rather than the easy, almost foregone conclusion romance that is Ginny and Harry.
Because this is when you talk about West Allen. Oh. Let's move on.
No.
I don't like you. I know you. I know you might not have been thinking about it, but as soon as I mentioned it, I'm sure you're like, yeah, I agree. Totally.
Oli City for the win. But the flag, anyway, we'll talk about it later. But I don't know. I guess chapter 13 now, unless you had more points on chapter.
No, you wanted to talk about Mandaga.
Yes. I was just going to mention that. I think in this chapter, there's a mention of when they go into Hogsmeade. I think they pass by or are near the Hogshead, whatever. I believe there's a mention of Mandangas being around there. And I believe this is when he might sell Sirius's two-way mirror, because essentially what happened was in book 5 he gets a two-way mirror from Sirius and then it gets crushed or something at the end of book 5 or books at the beginning of book 6, I can't remember, and then in book 7 he sees it at the bottom of his trunk, the bits, and then he sees like a flash of Dumbledore's eye in there, and he's thinking he's seeing Dumbledore, but it's actually Aberforth, because they see they're brothers. So then I believe this might have been when Mandangas might have sold some of Sirius's stuff to Aberforth, which is how he then has the mirror, which Harry also has communication with, and Dumbledore might have figured that out. Or maybe Aberforth would have told Dumbledore, like, Mandanga sold me all this stuff, and then maybe Dumbledore figured out it's a two-way mirror. So, you know, Dumbledore obviously is a bit of an omniscient being in this book, so you never know how he knew. But that's a way that Harry actually ends up somehow connecting with Aberforth, or believing that Dumbledore is, I don't know, there's some, we'll see when we get to book 7, but that's why I wanted to point that. It was very subtle, but having reflected on it, I'm like, oh, that could be something. So, but anyway, on to chapter 13.
You were the one who read ahead in your notes. Do you want to start off chapter 13?
Well, I think it was to do, because this one is when we learn a little bit more about Tom Riddle. So we get another memory, I believe, or at least more on how he came to be who he is. So there is an interaction that Harry has. My English today is just bad. I'm so sorry, guys. So essentially, Dumbledore goes to the orphanage, now I remember, and he sees Riddle for the first time. He sees Voldemort as Tom Riddle for the first time. So this is us seeing Voldemort, where he came from and his upbringing. And that is kind of like the summary of the chapter. So
I'm reading what I said here, and again, let me just read what I said. So I was just mentioning how we learn how Tom Riddle at such a young age was able to use his magic in an intentionally controlled way to punish the other kids who were bullying him before being taught by anyone. And the fact that Dumbledore was not prejudiced against him because he was a Pottermore, because Harry points this out. But Dumbledore is like, it was not a cause for concern because the ability emerged in all kinds of people, good and bad. It was more of Tom intentionally hurting other people, his cruelty, secrecy, and need to dominate the people around him. Mm. That was something that, made Dumbledore want to keep an eye on someone like him. And not forgetting that these people bullied him first, and the adults around him did not pay enough attention to help him or protect him. But the point I want to make is, why did Dumbledore let the behavior attitude towards the students in Slytherin house go unpunished?
Yeah.
A whole house that felt isolated by the whole school. He continually perpetuated this ideal by rewarding Harry and crew, aka Gryffindor house, and being both houses being rivals of each other. Though a competitive spirit is not a bad thing, but he continually rewarded Gryffindor over when perhaps when Slytherin is winning, and then each year they would lose to Gryffindor because Harry and the crew broke rules, left the school, went to Ministry of Magic and did something, all that stuff. And I think, I don't understand. Hey, Dumbledore is a complicated man. I feel like when he became headmaster and growing up in teaching at this school, did he go to Hogwarts as well?
Yes. I think every kid in England would have
gone. Being a student at Hogwarts, being a teacher at Hogwarts, and now being the headmaster, I'm sure this rivalry between Slytherin and the other houses was there, but mainly Slytherin and Gryffindor. the treatment between both houses. Mm. I feel like that's something that should have been addressed.
No, that is true. A lot of people definitely speak to that as well. I don't know. Like, for me, I think what I mostly mentioned was how, in terms of Harry and Voldemort, definitely had a very similar upbringing, both unloved in terms of the people that were caring for them, not really knowing their history. Harry was lied to in terms of who his parents were. He was sort of curious about why he might be doing some of the things that that he does or that happened to him. And so the thing that brings it into sharp relief is how Harry kind of, in a way, chose a different path. Yes, it could have been the choices presented to him were more, because unlike a Riddle who didn't have a Dumbledore, Dumbledore came and almost rescued Voldemort out of his misery in terms of offering him this opportunity to go to Hogwarts.
But he still left him in it.
But that is true. But that's the thing. Yes. He still left Harry in the Dursleys' care as well.
Yes.
It's just that I think the difference is almost nature versus nurture in terms of Harry's nature in a way was good.
Oh, yeah, true.
We'll get to it more when we talk about Merop in terms of Voldemort's mum and how she got to, give the dad the love potion or whatever, where some people could argue to say because Voldemort wasn't born out of love, he therefore couldn't love. But it's kind of a bad slippery slope argument of like kids that are born in bad and awkward situations. Does that mean that they become bad and whatever? No, that's not really what it means. It just means by nature, Harry kind of got to realize the power he had, but didn't think he needed to wield it over other people. He could have leaned into his dislike of the Dursleys and hated Muggles, for example, but he didn't. Yeah. He didn't. So it's a bit weird. And also it's kind of surprising that Riddle already starts underestimating women and a mother's love, because I think in this chapter it mentions it in terms of his caretaker at the time in the orphanage, and maybe dismissing his mom as being like a nobody kind of thing when she's actually the, because that's the thing, that's what I think.
No, but in the recent chapter I read, it was more that he was thinking if his mom was the wizard in this scenario or the witch in this scenario, she would not have let herself die.
Yeah,
so she would have had magic to protect herself and them, essentially. She would still be with... So he was like, no, it must have been a muggle. Yeah.
Thing. That, but at the time, in this chapter, it's more so speaking to the fact that he still was thinking... They were still proud of the Riddle name because he was thinking his dad was the guy that had given him these skills, whereas his mom had died. So obviously she couldn't be this powerful woman that, whoever she was. But then he discovered who he actually was. And that's why he had to shed the Riddle name, because his dad was not the person he thought he was, anyway, whatever. So that's chapter 13 for me. That's really it. I don't have many more points.
He
just wants to be set apart. He wants to be already alone. He wants to have loyalists, not friends. We're already seeing the beginnings of that at a young age, which is kind of sad. So, yeah, I guess on to chapter 14. Once again, summarizing that one, it is about... This is when the Felix Felicis gets unleashed in terms of the lucky potion.
Yep.
Harry kind of tricks Ron into thinking he's taken it, and then they go on to kind of win the game and stuff because he's thinking, is this one?
No, I'm reading my notes.
I'm reading my notes too, actually. No. I know what happens. Yes, this is the chapter when he does give Ron the Felix Felicis. So Ron thinks he's had the Felix Felicis, but tied to that also is the discovery of Ginny and Dean kissing in a little cupboard or broom closet or something, and it kind of unleashes the green monster in Harry makes Ginny and Ron have a really massive big fight. So yeah, that's kind of the summary of the chapter. I don't know what thoughts you had on it.
I start off like when Ron and Hermione are arguing about the Slug Club. So poor Harry once again trying to avoid the arguments between Ron and Hermione. So this was in regard to the Slug Club, Ron being jealous and not being invited, and suggesting that Hermione should get together with Connor McClarkin so that, it's funny because I'm just reading, I think chapter 16 or 17, where I'm rushing ahead, but Ron actually suggested that she go to the Slug Club with Connor McClarkin, and she does. Wow, Hermione is petty.
I know.
And I love it because Ron deserves everything, huh? He deserves all that jealousy and then just dying inside. Yeah. But let me continue. So yeah, suggesting that she go with Connor McClarkin so that they could be crowned king and queen of Slack Club. Hermione blushing and verbalizing that they're allowed to invite plus ones, and she was going to ask Ron, but if you'd rather she get with McClarkin, and Ron rushing to say he doesn't want that. The fact that Harry is so aware of his friends' feelings for each other, considering how oblivious he can be sometimes. So, and I quote, I don't know how to, you know what, I'll move on. I don't know how to say quote, apparently. I say all kinds of things. Anyway, and I quote, it was not as though he was really surprised, thought Harry, as he wrestled with the thorny vine intent upon throttling him. He had had an inkling that this might happen sooner or later, but he was not sure how he felt about it. He and Cho were now too embarrassed to look at each other, let alone talk to each other. What if Ron and Hermione started going out together, then split up? Could their friendship survive it? Harry remembered the few weeks when they had not been talking to each other in third year. He had not enjoyed trying to bridge the distance between them. And then what if they didn't split up? What if they became like Bill and Fleur, and it became excruciatingly embarrassing to be in their presence so that he was shut out for good? My boy has been suffering since third year. But what I will say is, I wish I had like finished the book earlier so that I could just title some notes under the red flag that is Ron Weasley. He is a blazing red flag.
Yep.
Like, and I know he's a growing boy, and I'm probably, what's the word? Villainizing him, if that's a word. I don't know.
I feel like you're applying standards that us as adults would do.
Yes. On a young growing boy. And I don't want to do that because it's very easy. In this Twitter age we're living in, there was this day someone posted a picture of themselves in a bikini, and you know, it was a nice post. Then above it, correct tweet was, oh, now we can't go out, you know, people posting these things, you know. And someone was like, how is that affecting you?
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah. Everything is under scrutiny and you know. Anyway, and oh yeah, so I do have a point about Harry being jealous upon discovering Ginny and Dean kissing. Actually say, Harry being jealous upon discovering Ginny and Dean kissing. I'm sorry, Audrey, but all I did was roll my eyes. I like Ginny as a character. She's awesome, and I'm glad she is living her life. But her and Harry getting together is just the my best friend sibling trope, and it's just too obvious here, considering we started with the unrequited crush trope. And normally I wouldn't struggle with a ship like this, but something about them together is just not doing it for me.
You know what? I'm just never going to convince you. So
I can see how it can happen.
It's fine. We're just going to accept that you're never going to like it. So I'm fine. You know what? I'm actually now better in terms of knowing that by the time we get to the end, it'll make no difference anyway. So I can be rest assured that you just never like Ginny and Harry. It's fine. If I can speak to my points, yes. Just quickly though, because you've already pretty much covered everything that I said. I only just liked the sibling fight out of that more than Harry having the green monster in him unleashed by seeing Ginny kissing another boy. It was just the viciousness of the siblings fighting, like what they were saying to each other. Ginny hitting back at Ron. Like, I don't know if you remember it as much, but
I'm reading my notes here, and I think I vaguely remember it.
So
yes,
I'll read a couple of lines. So they walk into the broom closet or wherever they were walking through, and then Ron just goes, oi, and then they break apart. And then Ginny's like, what? And then he's like, I don't want to find my own sister snogging people in public. And then Ginny's like, this was a deserted corridor till you came butting in. And obviously Dean and Harry are trying to, you know, be looking like they're not there hearing this. And then he tries to get Ginny to go. And then she's like, you go. I want a word with my dear brother. And they keep fighting. And she's pretty much like, let's get this straight once and for all. It's none of your business who I go out with or what I do with them. And then Ron is like, yes, it is. Do you think I want people saying my sister is a? And she's like, a what? A what exactly? And he's like, he doesn't mean anything, Ginny. This is Harry trying to help. And then she's like, oh, yes, he does. And just because he's never snogged anyone in his life, just because the best kiss he's ever had is from our Auntie Muriel. And then Ron is like, shut your mouth. And she's like, no, I will not. I've seen you with phlegm, meaning fleur, but hoping she'll kiss you on the cheek every time you see her. It's pathetic. If you went out and got a bit of snogging done yourself, you wouldn't mind so much that everyone else does it. And then Ron pulls out his wand, pretty much trying to hex her. And he's like, you don't know
what you didn't.
Ron had pulled out his wand too, because Ginny had also pulled out her wand, I think. Yes, because Ginny drew her wand earlier on. And then Ron is like, you don't know what you're talking about. Just because I don't do it in public. And then Ginny screamed with a derisive laugh, essentially just going, ha, 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 whatever. I can't do it too loudly on the mic, otherwise people will scream. And then she's like, been kissing Pidgewidgeon, have you? Which is this little bird pet. Or have you got a picture of Auntie Muriel stashed under your pillow? And he's like, you. And then he like hexed her. And it went under Harry's left arm and missed Ginny by inches. And he's like, don't be stupid. And then Ginny shouts, Harry snogged Cho Chang and Hermione snogged Victor Crumb. Because obviously Ginny would know because they would have been talking. It's only you who acts like it's something disgusting, Ron. And that's because you've got about as much experience as a 12-year-old. And then she went away. And I'm just like, that for me, regardless of the Harry-Ginny part of it, the sibling viciousness, I was just like, oh my God, I relate to this so much, because it's like you're trying to get to the worst part of a person because you actually know them better than they know themselves. So you have so much arsenal to use against your sibling. Oh,
I think me and my siblings just resorted to fisticuffs.
Oh, I think with you and brothers is a bit different because you guys get physical. I think when it's a brother-sister dynamic or brother-brother dynamic, but when it's sisters in terms of sister and sister. Words are powerful. The fisticuffs that you guys used are pretty much them drawing their wands and wanting to hex each other. So there's a mix of that. But I can only relate more to the words getting to you.
Because, that's interesting. You know,
I can't say we ever fought physically. Yes, we might have pushed each other around, whatever, but it was always words. And words are just more like impactful and soul-shattering than any physical fight.
We put it out and it was done. I think it was because I grew up with boys.
You used your fist? Okay, let's talk about that one.
And then I got to a point when I realized, hey, I'm going to be beat down here because he's now stronger and taller.
Yes.
So I can't do that anymore.
I wonder all to get the emotions. I'm really scared for me to even think of children that are my own fighting.
But sometimes they just got to figure out it between themselves. Because the more you try, the dominant qualities.
So anyway, I just remember that scene from before, but when I read it, I was like, oh, this is way more intense than I even remember it. So it was quite interesting. And obviously it triggers, like you're saying, Harry being like, my best friend's sister, it is annoying, I think, in some respects, but as a person who had already accepted this ship, I just kind of was reading through it like, oh, okay, whatever. Because by the time, to be honest, when I was a teenager, like I'm saying, they were my ship. I loved Harry and Ginny. I was reading, you know, fan fiction, printing it out and reading it in my bed for bedtime stories because I didn't have...
Wait, you used to print out fan fiction?
Because there was no... smartphones weren't a thing then. So you couldn't just read your book on the
you know what you write because I would spend a lot of time on the computer exactly. Just reading.
So instead of being on the computer at 11 p.m. my parents going go to bed, I would print it out because we still had a printer at home then as well. We don't even have a printer now. Print it out and read pages and pages of fan fiction, just like consuming it. It's just please, I hope you're not listening to this and thinking your mom is weird. Yeah, it's just that. And I think for me, my next point is going to be about Harry showing up for his friends, really, even though he can be self-absorbed.
You speaking about that, I just mentioned that Harry having that dream, like, you know, yes. And
I'm like, what is a dream? Of course, I forgot it.
Your ooh was like, yeah, I know, like, you know, that dream. So he has a dream about Ron trying to attack him for trying to get with his sister.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I get you.
But by midday, he would have happily exchanged the dream Ron for the real one, who was not only cold-shouldering Ginny and Dean, but also treating a hurt and bewildered Hermione with an icy sneering indifference. Mm-hmm. What was more, Ron seemed to have become overnight as touchy and ready to lash out as an average blast and a scrut. Harry spent the day attempting to keep the peace between Ron and Hermione with no success. Finally, Hermione departed for bed in high dungeon, and Ron stalked off to the boys' dormitory after swearing angrily at several frightened first years for looking at him. Ron's anger, like...
Yep, it is a cloud. It's like a storm. And it takes over everything.
And it's, there's a part in the later chapters where Harry is talking about, probably we'll talk about... if I mention it now, probably don't have to talk about it then. But Harry is relieved that the Ron of these chapters is not, you know, in play, because that's when they have they're preparing for Slughorn's party and Harry needs to ask someone out. So there are girls milling around everywhere he goes, and he's trying to avoid them. The other Ron would have been jealous about that. But the Ron who's just won the Quidditch game for them is happy.
That's true.
Got his lavender, and he's won. So Ron is not jealous, and that he's not true.
He's very popular. That is true.
He's very popular.
I think it's just everything's going to come up because, what do you call it? So this is, for me, now touching on what happens in terms of leading up to the Quidditch game. Harry pretty much acts like he's spiking the drink, and Hermione sees it, and he does it in a way that he can get someone to think that Ron... to make Ron think, oh, there's Felix Felicis in there, and Ron drinks it, and he's thinking he's going to be the luckiest person. So obviously, with that mentality, he kind of goes in thinking he can seize the day, which he does. Yeah, I like that misdirect because it obviously
helps. But the conversation between her and Harry, she's like, she looks scandalized, bending low so that only Harry could hear her. She hissed, "You should be expelled." No. "You should be expelled for that. I've never have believed it of you, Harry." "Talk. Who's talking?" he whispered back. Confounded anyone lately? Because Hermione did that to Cormac McLaggen.
I love that you're trying to evoke the spirit of Stephen Fry in your readings of the lines.
I think trying to imitate Emma Watson.
No, I'm saying, but you're trying to imitate Emma Watson, but in a way you're trying to evoke, like... Stephen Fry reading Hermione Granger's lines, which is funny. But yeah, I don't know. I think obviously it then backfires in a way because Ron ends up kissing Lavender instead of, you know, it being something that just is good just for Ron. He ends up getting this girl to really declare her feelings for him because, you know, he's now the most popular bachelor at school outside of Harry himself. So... yeah, there's a lot of drama there, and obviously the bird attack, because in the film, it's a lot more intense. You can talk about that. I just wanted to know, it was more brutal.
I just skipped an because it looks like I'm hating on Ron in this book, but I'm not really. So I'm gonna skip my point about more Ron red flags and move on to. So after the argument between Ron and Hermione, and Hermione walks off, I think. Harry going after Hermione to comfort her. Harry once again stuck in the middle between his friends. They really should be paying him for all this trauma. And do I blame Hermione for sending that swarm of birds to attack Ron? No, I do not. Because he's been behaving like an a-hole towards her for no reason other than his jealousy. And over a thing that happened 2 years ago. I can forgive fourth year Ron. And you know that's hard for me to even say because he acted pretty much the same back then too, but seriously, like, you know.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, mind you, I'm very much conscious of the fact that these are teenagers that we're
trying to color. And I'm like, I'm not Twitter, so, maturity. You know, we all have our faults and weaknesses.
They're just kids at the end of the day, Tinashe.
Yes.
Just kids.
Yes.
But anyway, to make it so that we move through to the next chapter, chapter 15, pretty much, in summary, it's when Harry, kind of gets fed a little bit more about his Draco theory because the Slughorn party happens and Draco gate crushes it, gets pulled out by Snape, and Harry overhears the conversation about an unbreakable vow, essentially.
It was a very revealing conversation, wasn't it? Like in an empty classroom where anyone could just walk in, even if they were trying to speak in court. But I'm true. like, like, what a conversation to have in a place where anyone could just pop in. Yeah.
But actually, before we speak to that, I actually wanted to say it was actually sad for me to read this chapter because they mentioned Hagrid, and Robbie Coltrane, who portrayed Hagrid in the films, passed away. We haven't done like a news of Harry Potter world segment in a while. So that's kind of news that came about.
I feel like we've spoken about it, haven't we?
No, I don't. I'm not sure. I wouldn't know, to be honest. I can't argue or dispute that because I don't remember when the last time is. But I just thought kind of we might have mentioned it. But I think I was more so talking about actually, yes, you're right. We might have mentioned, but I think I was talking about how just it evoked that sadness in me to be like, oh, you know, the character is there, but the person who made us love the character a lot more is no longer, like, you know, alive. And,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
He saw rest in peace. But yeah, the awkwardness of two people fighting. And it being a trio, so you're the only one who has to go in between the two people that are fighting. It sucks.
Yes. I, like, honestly, they need to pay Harry some, like, you know, some money.
Definitely.
For all this trauma.
Definitely.
But I was going to say, I see why I thought, because you remember me mentioning that I thought Harry and Luna got together in the book? Yeah, in canon, like, so Harry asks Luna to the, what you call it,
to Slughorn's party. Yeah.
And I think I took that, and probably fan fiction doesn't help as well, because now you're kind of mixing everything, like, you know, the world's bland and everything. So, yeah, I'm like,
I wonder, so is your love for Luna based on the books or the films?
Say that again.
In terms of your love for Luna and Harry together, is it based on the Luna in the books or the Luna in the films?
Honestly, I think it's Luna in fan fiction, because she's more fleshed out. But I do like Luna in the book, especially in this one, because remember at the beginning when, because I think she's trolling them, like when they're on the on the carriages and whatnot. And I can't remember exactly what she says to them.
Yeah, because I put
She's talking about her usual stuff, right? And I'm like, I feel like she's trolling them. She's making fun of these people, even though they think she's crazy. But I think I like Luna in the fan fiction mostly because she comes across like this, but there's a mastermind behind all that. She's like, you know, they lean very heavily into her Ravenclaw characteristics, persona. Did you feel something for her? Because in this chapter, when Harry asked her, right, he regrets it kind of. He doesn't regret it. Like he kind of regrets it, right? And he rushes quickly to say to her, "We're going as friends." But Luna is just so happy to be asked anyway. She doesn't even care about the friend zone. What friend zone? She loves it in the friend zone, actually.
No, but I don't think it's so much a friend zoning of that.
I mean, in terms of, like, she's happy to even have friend,
have someone
who asks her out, like you know, even if Harry was thinking about it more in friend zoning, Luna is not even thinking like that.
She's just happy to have somebody. That is true.
Yes.
No, it's just more so funny. Just Luna and Harry, like, just never, ever.
Well, okay.
I think, no, it's
all your crack shipping.
Never, ever, ever read Harry and Luna together.
I'm curious, though. Which characters have you crack shipped Harry with?
Nobody.
How many Harry crack ships?
No one. I only ever have done Hermione and Harry and Ginny. And outside of that, I think I might have, nobody. When it comes to Harry Potter, I'm very vanilla as it goes. But
I mean, like, when you're reading the stories, I've read, I'm not going to mention the other ships, but I've read Harry Daphne.
If I don't see it in some form or shape, I don't search for it.
Okay.
That's my fanfic. Like, that's the thing. Like, I'm not like
We are reading Harry Potter. Which character do you immediately, like, gravitate towards to? Because generally, the first character I gravitate towards to, that's the character I go look for fan fiction for. But the more I read fan fiction, I start liking other characters, then I lean towards maybe looking for Hermione centric ones, or where Harry's still centric, but Hermione is also a featuring character, or the other characters are also featuring that. Maybe they might not be with Harry, they might be with another character, but I'm still enjoying the story. So for me, I can crack ship.
No, I'm not like you. I think that we've talked about this before without going on too much because of our time.
Okay.
But I'm very much if I see it in the books and it's a potential, let's say, no, mind you, this goes beyond even Harry Potter. Like, I'm thinking of even, like, let's say Bridgerton or whatever, like the fics we usually read outside of what we read. If there is something I've seen on screen and I want more of that, I will pursue that. I don't then tend to go, for example, the only, I could say, crack ship I might have explored was Mary and Darcy in terms of the Pride and Prejudice side, because that, you introduced me to it, I was like, oh, that might have actually been an interesting thing, because I think I've thought about it, or I might have seen it somewhere in a book that I read. But either way, in Harry Potter world, it is just literally Draco and Hermione or Harry and Ginny. I've barely ventured. I've read a fic where it's Harry and Hermione together, but she eventually ends up with Draco. So it's not so much that I read it for Harry and Hermione. I just read it for Draco and Hermione, and it happened to have Harry and Hermione in there. Because for me, I think it just comes from that basis of, like, where did I get that initial...
Wait, sorry. In the story, Harry and Hermione start off together.
Yeah, so she's with Harry.
And then Draco's ass comes and interrupts
No, she doesn't interrupt, because she doesn't even love Harry like that. They're, like, more like a relationship. It's almost, like, similar to, in that story anyway, without going on, it's almost like how Ron and Hermione started. Kind of like just childhood best, like the writer portrays it that similar. So there's not passion in their relationship, and the passion is through Draco. So, I mean, whichever, mind you, do not get on and on about it. I'm not a good crack shipper like you might be, because for me, it goes down to not so much canon. Like, okay, Ginny and Pansy and Harry is a shipping crack ship that I always see sometimes. Pansy and Harry, especially when it's Hermione and Draco. Very weird. Yeah. But I think the writers in there would be trying to get the Slytherins into the story so they get someone to date the Gryffindors, which would be a Pansy or a Blaze or whatever. So I could say I've read that crack ship and I've actually ended up liking Pansy and Harry, but I've never been then been like, oh, I'll go and search for Pansy and Harry fan fiction. I just stick to what I know, and the side characters can come and fix mixed in there, but that's it. So yeah, to not go on and on, sorry for the, you know, listeners, but
no, it's interesting dialogue. I love that.
I will talk about it more after this, actually. So I don't know if you had any more points in regards to the
I don't,
but I think what I wanted to mention, well, actually we talked about the thoughts, because the conversation does happen in like a very open space in regards to Draco and Snape having the unbreakable vow. I don't know if you had any more thoughts on it, though, before we move on.
Oh, no. No.
Yeah. Because I just thought at that point it's kind of interesting how intense it is getting. You know, like Draco is very much feeling the pressure, and he's like, yeah, this is going to happen.
It's interesting. The other thing, like, though I didn't have a point, but what you're talking about, like Draco feeling the pressure, Harry points thought that when Draco is dragged into the classroom where they're having the party, that even though Draco is acting like he's sucking up to Slughorn, and we know Draco is, like, you know, probably preoccupied with the fact that he was interrupted in the middle of doing, like, his plan or something. So he's trying to suck up to Slughorn, so, you know, it distracts from the real purpose of why he's there. But Harry can kind of see that there's no Draco's normal level of sucking up. He's preoccupied by something. Yeah, he was up to something. Yeah.
Well, I mean, at the moment, yes, he's very much a busy person. Very, very busy. But I do want to speak to the point where I said the coward comment. You're right. I think I used the wrong word there, because in this case, he's the one that's saying, I want to do this task. I want to do this task. Old Draco would have just been willing for Snape to help him with the task, but he's very much wanting to show that he's capable, because he knows the stakes. He knows his mind. That's where, for me, if I bounce off to speak back to the fan fiction without going on too much, because we'll talk about it afterwards, that's the jumping point for a lot of people to say his mother, his love for his mother was what was driving him a lot to do this, because he's kind of like...
Some people start in book six. That's where they start, as you were saying, that's where they start giving him a redemption storyline.
Yeah, definitely. Because a lot of stories that I read will be like post Order of the Phoenix, you know, or post Half-Blood Prince. And they're accounting for the fact that post Order of the Phoenix, Draco really starts feeling the pressure, because at the end of Order of the Phoenix, his dad is in jail and his mom is alone. And there's this thing hanging over their heads to try to kill Dumbledore. Otherwise, Voldemort will have his way with them, kind of thing. So, yeah, we'll talk. Anyway, let's not make this a fan fiction edition of the podcast. So, yeah, chapter 17. I just 16. Started off saying that Fred and George are annoying.
Chapter 16.
Ron. Oh, chapter 16. Sorry. Chapter 16. I wanted to wrap up so quickly. I'm like, I'm tired. Oh my God.
Why are you so shady?
I'm sorry. Chapter 16, A Very Frosty Christmas. Yeah, so the kids, the trio, go home. You know, there's an interaction with Lupin in there, and then also an interaction with the current Minister for Magic, Scrimgeour. So that's the general summary. And initially it starts off with obviously Ron and Harry discussing what he heard about the unbreakable vow, and Fred and George kind of annoying Ron, I believe, with the, I think...
Lavender one thing.
Yes. So yeah, after that, I just kind of talk about when they get home.
Harry again thinking that the Half-Blood Prince was, he's dead or Sirius or Lupin, mm-hmm. and us knowing that his name, just what we've said before, really, yeah. that, you know, he's going to spend the whole year being defensive for the Half-Blood Prince and his brilliant work, and he's going to be sick about it. Then I talk about Ginny picking out maggots out of Harry's hair. I'm like, you know what? The way I hate creepy crawlies, the way I just, I'm like, if someone did that for me, man, not that I would know why maggots are in my, please, I don't even have that thought in my head, but that's love.
Oh my God. You've already jumped that all love. That.
I would not do that for anybody. I would tell you that there's something in your, I would not. That,
if just
I
look at them you, judging them. That right? Is true.
If you see me doing that for you, know that I love you, man.
That is true.
And then Percy, you know what? I think I will not forget that picture you sent to me.
My beloved measure of a man fan fiction.
Man. So when I talk about Percy, the image I have of him in my head and the book film version are completely two different people. The fanfic made version, who? Percy, sir. Sir Percy. But book and film version, I was like, he really used his strange relationship with his family, and probably knowing his mother would be really happy to see him home for Christmas, to facilitate Scrimgeour to have access to Harry. Because this man, the minister has been trying to speak to Harry since the end of last year with the events. Actually, Fudge was trying to speak to Harry, and then when Scrimgeour got into power, he also was trying to speak to Harry.
Yeah.
I'm like, Percy, come on, man.
Wow.
And it's not until book 7 that he realizes he let his stubborn self and his career-driven ways like separate him from his family for that long, that they only reunite when, you know, it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Otherwise, that's all I said. And I only just said Harry's conversation with Scrimgeour, but I didn't put any thought to it, really. I'm like, I kind of feel like if this had happened last year when Harry was still under the thumb of Dolores Umbridge, I'm like, Harry, you dumb mofo. What are you saying? Think. But, you know, I was kind of like, let Harry do whatever he wants to. Because he deserves it.
Yep,
my boy suffered last year. And the fact that he points out to Scrimgeour, like, you know, the I must not tell lies thing. I'm like, you abused my boy. Yeah.
That's true.
But anyway, that's all the thoughts I had for chapter 16.
Okay, well, I mean, you ran through all of it, so I'm just going to run through all of it too. It wasn't a conversation. It was just a monologue.
My bad.
No.
Honestly, when I look at my notes, they're just like one, two lines. And I'm like...
That's okay. It's been a while. We're a bit rusty. But anyway, to speak to the point, I spoke about, I pointed out the Lupin thing as well, and the fact that he pointed out to Harry that he inherited his hate for Snape essentially from his dad and, you know, his godfather. And it doesn't help that obviously Snape hates Harry in his own right. So it just perpetuates that idea of hating Snape. But then it is limiting a little bit, because then it always makes Harry suspect the worst out of Snape. And in mm-hmm. this case, it's not the time to be suspecting the worst out of Snape, mm-hmm. because he actually is working on their side. But it's just mm-hmm. not until... it's too late as well, to use your words, that he discovers that, and it kind of just gets him to name his kid Severus for some reason. But anyway.
When we get to book 7, I'm going to have words.
But anyway, it just shows the power of hatred. Hatred. Towards a person, in terms of it being, that's how generational hate happens. That's why people keep hating a group of people in terms of race or gender or whatever, because it's perpetuated by generations and generations and generations, which is really sad. But I mean, I'm not feeling sad for Snape because he's also quite a vindictive character.
Yeah.
It just shows that, you know, in Harry, it was inbred in some ways, even though he'd never met his dad. But knowing more about him and how he hated Snape led to this. Although Snape could have been the bigger man and might not have led to this thing happening. Anyway, I then also love the nuances shown of like Lupin's bitterness at being used as a spy by Dumbledore. Because, you know, he's suited to being something he's never wanted. Like, he's a spy because he's a werewolf, but he's a werewolf not by choice. He's a werewolf by mistake, by accident, you know, by unfortunate circumstances of being targeted by Greyback or whatever the werewolf is. Yeah. So it just shows you the power of Dumbledore, the puppet mastery level that he was doing, because he disregards his puppet's well-being and just kind of favors achieving the greater good.
Thank you for saying that. Thank you for saying that he disregards his puppet's well-being. All he does is for the greater good. It does lead to a next point in chapter 70, but continue.
Okay. Well, yes, the greater good is what essentially led him to being in cahoots with what's his name? Grindelwald, whatever. But it's not until book 7 that's talked about. But that's a point I always bring up when we talk about Dumbledore, that he's a puppet master and he always wants to see his ends met, and it doesn't matter the means to those ends. So it's a bit, it's a bit tricky. But then also touching on the fact that Lupin is getting involved in the werewolf underground shows the stakes that are at play here. It's not just muggles and wizards and half-blood princes and half-bloods and full-bloods, whatever they're called. It is creatures and, you know, vampires, werewolves, everybody is at it. There's a stake in this war now. And people talk about how, you know, Voldemort before was doing this as well, but now it's like, oh my god, the reality is really there, kind of being brought to light in this book. And then also not touching too much on like anything to do with the Half-Blood Prince Association, but when the Christmas presents were being given, I just loved the cycle of jealousy that was in Ron, where he gets his gift from Lavender, but he's also happy that Hermione didn't get a gift from Cormac, because obviously he's thinking that Cormac is in a relationship with Hermione. It's a little minor point, but I only pointed it out because of how it just shows the cycle of like jealousy just never ending, because he's fine to get a gift from Lavender even though he doesn't care, but he also doesn't want Hermione to get a gift from Cormac, which is
red flag.
I wish I had not pointed it out now because just being there. But then also the maggots came from Creature, by the way, to confirm, because he sent Harry maggots as a Christmas present, which is so unfortunate. You didn't even have to send them. I guess they're compelled to give their master something, which is really crazy.
I actually was confused. I'm like, where is Creature? Do they not get along? But then that's a book 7 thing.
A book 7 thing, which is really sad actually when it happens. But then also obviously Harry, like you pointed out, getting butterflies from Ginny, kind of helping him with the maggot situation, which is kind of cute. I mean, as a shipper, honest, I remember these moments when I was reading this book when I was like 16 or something. It was like, oh my god, this is so cute. And at the time, I was like, oh my god, I love this book so much, you know. But now I'm kind of realizing, oh god, I really was a teenager. But it's still cute. It's still cute, you know. And then also Harry suspecting Tonks is where Patronus is now a werewolf. I mean, sorry, he suspects Tonks is werewolf. Tonks is Patronus.
Thunderbolts up in here.
Exactly. Tonks is Patronus is a werewolf, knowing that Lupin and Tonks are a thing. So I don't know why he hasn't connected the dots, but he hasn't.
No, does he actually say werewolf, or does
I'm he, not sure, but he knows that it's a big thing.
You say dog or something.
No, initially, when they first meet after she rescues him from the train,
I remember that part, but when he's talking
in this one, I know I pointed it out, so he must have said it. I'm not sure. I'll let you figure it out. But for me, actually, the conversation with Scrimgeour, I really liked that conversation. It was showing a level of maturity that Harry had sort of displayed sometimes, but never to this level of speaking to an authority and knowing how to play the game. Essentially, he's speaking to a politician who he knows wants to use him as the chosen one to represent the ministry as if they're a good thing, but he also knows how the ministry, as you pointed out, when Umbridge made him harm himself essentially by saying I must not tell lies, he kind of recognizes that they're just wanting to use him as a pawn in their game to get their own ends kind of met. So for me, I think I liked, there's something about how Scream Ewer also points out how Dumbledore must have done a number on Harry. So he talks about how, you know, you really are Dumbledore's man through and through. It is true, because Dumbledore has done a number of him, because by the time in book 7 we discover Dumbledore's true nature, we really realize that he has been hiding quite a lot from Harry, and he's been making Harry idolize him in a way that isn't healthy and kind of leads to very hurtful revelations or whatever. So,
continue.
No, but I was just going to finish off and say, but it is good to see Harry aligned with Dumbledore. But Dumbledore is obviously not a good guy. So,
it kind of makes me, it brings me back to like chapter 2 or 3 when Dumbledore writes Harry a letter saying that he's going to come and pick him up, and Harry can't believe it that he's going to be rescued so early. And then Dumbledore shows up, and he's very petty and shady with the threatening the Dursleys. And to Harry, it's like, oh, I'm being rescued. Oh, this is my savior kind of thing. He's thankful to this man, but this is the same man who left him in this environment. Even if living in this environment was good for him, all these times that he could have checked up on him or made his life a little less difficult for him, Dumbledore did not care. And so upon being rescued early this holiday, he is thankful to him. He's thankful to his puppet master. He really was, as you said, he was worked.
It's kind of sad, but hey, that's all I kind of had on this chapter. I don't know if you had anything more before we kind of move on to when.
Oh, we can move on.
Yeah, so now chapter 17, which is the correct chapter. It's called A Sluggish Memory, and it's about the discovery. So initially, there's a bit of theorizing that Dumbledore does in regards to Voldemort's journey at Hogwarts, because there's very limited information. Essentially, Voldemort's loyalists, we can't call them friends, but loyalists, not many of them were able to be upfront with the memories of Voldemort at the time. But obviously, Dumbledore just kind of extrapolated, used conjecture to like try to piece together the story of Voldemort at Hogwarts, but it is capped off by the memory of Slughorn, which he has tempered with and becomes the, I guess, what do you call it? The MacGuffin, I think that's the term they use in film technique language in terms of the object that people now start pursuing in the story, which is the memory. So essentially, I don't know. It's a technical term that I've learned, and I love using it. So I use it whenever I can. But anyway, it's a thing. It's an object. It's a thing that people pursue in the story. So, you know, whatever. So anyway, but mixed in all of this is also the apparition lessons, I believe, being announced or starting at some point. So, yeah, that was the summary of that. I don't know what thoughts you had on that chapter.
My thoughts actually flow from the previous chapter, because Harry brings it up with Dumbledore when he goes for the lesson, that Scrimmage accused him of being Dumbledore's man through and through. And Dumbledore is like, how very rude of him. Harry's like, I told him I was. Mm-hmm. Dumbledore opened his mouth to speak and then closed it again. Behind Harry, Fox the Phoenix let out a low, soft musical cry. To Harry's intense embarrassment, he suddenly realized that Dumbledore's bright blue eyes looked rather watery. And Dumbledore is like, I'm very touched about that. It is very hard. I'd say that I feel like we do get a true glimpse into Dumbledore's mindset and feelings regarding his relationship with Harry at this point in time in the story. Mm-hmm. That at the very least, he doesn't fully view him as a mere pawn. He has become, as you said before, someone he cares about. But to what extent that is versus the greater good, the greater plan, the all-encompassing plan of what he's trying to achieve in defeating Voldemort versus how much he cares for Harry now. Not sure where I would put it, because at the back of my mind, I'm still thinking, this is the puppet master. It does not ever stop being the puppet master until that very last point at the platform in book 7. Yeah,
that is true. I think, you know what, I'll run through my points, because then I'll speak to the point of Dumbledore, because I'm wanting to connect to the Fantastic Beasts series and how they portray Dumbledore in there, because I like that portrayal. So I'll just quickly, I'll do like you and do a little monologue so I can get those points out of the way. I don't care. I just want to talk about it as more of like a wrap-up point, the Dumbledore thing. So I'm just going to point out, you know, obviously, with the war coming, when the kids leave the burrow, Mrs. Weasley is very emotional, you know. You can sense that there's things happening, there are things coming, and it's sad. It's a very sad moment. It actually is sad because it's kind of the last happy summer, if you think about it, because not summer, sorry, happy winter or something, whatever, because after this, it's just intense and intense and intense, like yeah. In terms of,
I was about to say, what about the wedding? But then I'm like,
I'm talking about before Voldemort has become the threat that he becomes at the end of this book. Because when Dumbledore dies, shit hits the fan, as they say. So this is really for me now a very poignant. I hate saying the word because I can't say it, but now I said it right.
You're making me feel.
It's so sad.
It's the last time before, you know, this is the last time that they will look back and be like, Dumbledore was still now. Like, as much as we talk about Dumbledore being the problem in some ways, he also was holding these people together. If it wasn't for Dumbledore, there would be no Order of the Phoenix. Snape wouldn't be helping them to try to take down Voldemort. Things wouldn't be in motion as they are. But anyway, we'll talk about that. I talked about my Dumbledore point when I didn't want to talk about my Dumbledore point. Anyway, so, but then also there's a turn in the Love Chronicles when they go back. I call them the Love Chronicles because this book is all about love, which is crazy. But when they return to Hogwarts, you know, Hermione's still pretending Ron doesn't exist. Ron is not liking Lavender anymore. Ginny seeming not to be excited about, you know, Dean anymore because they're in the train they're back at school, and she's going to, Hermione invites her to sit with them, but she's like, oh, I've got to go see Dean. But it's like very watered down going to see a boyfriend feeling.
Yeah.
And also I wanted to just point out, Ron is a March baby. He was born in March. Maybe that is why I sometimes defend him so much, because us March babies, we're very, very passionate. I don't think he's a Pisces. I don't think he is. Let me just.
You see the expression of my face on my face.
I see it. Ron's birthday. So it's very easy to just type this in Google and have it come up. It's the first. He's a Pisces. You see, this is why he is so emotional. He's so volatile. I'm just kidding. I don't know, but he's a Pisces. He's a Pisces.
Yes.
He's a Pisces. Anyway, I just love that though. It's a little detail that I kind of was like, oh yeah. And then obviously, you talked about Dumbledore being touched by Harry's statement about, you know, him declaring that he's a man through and through. But obviously, we all know that Harry's being used by the puppet master. And I love the fact that he can't.
You've said this already. That's okay. Continue. I was going to say, do you think at that point in time, as I've said, Dumbledore, like, is there any part of him that's conflicted about the way he's using Harry?
Yep. And I want to, let me just finish this and then I'll speak.
I'm not bad.
I want you to, I didn't want to talk about Dumbledore, but I keep bringing him up. Damn it. I'm not reading my points clearly. So then I say it. I'm like, oh no, I'm not meant to say that. But I don't want to say that obviously to the listeners, which I'm obviously saying now. So whatever. But anyway, Snape. Harry can't bring himself to call Snape professor. It's very difficult for him. He never will be able to. But also when Dumbledore starts chronicling the journey that Voldemort took in Hogwarts and stuff, it is just kind of interesting that if Harry hadn't discovered more of his journey and his parentage and stuff, would he have potentially also become like a Voldemort who has nobody and kind of just feels like, you know, he has to kind of conquer people rather than and their respect to be like a leader, who knows. And then also just the layers, it just shows you the layers and the layers of the book as we've been progressing, how we started with Voldemort being this weird guy at the back of someone's head, and then coming out of a diary and everything, and now we're getting to know more about his journey. And then also I love that there was a confirmation about how the underage wizard trace actually works, because it doesn't confirm who did the magic, only that there was generally magic in that area, because in this regard it is in regards to Voldemort killing the muggles, the Riddles, and there's a trace of magic there because he was still an underage wizard when he killed them, which is really crazy to think about. The summer he comes back to talk about the memory of the Horcruxes in terms of talking to there are too many H-O names. Horace Slughorn to talk about with Professor Slughorn, that memory. He'd already killed people. So he'd already done murder, but he's coming to figure out how to murder more people. Like, what? It's crazy.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was my points about that chapter, really. I don't know
why. I'd actually said why Dumbledore, initially when I was reading that chapter, I'm like, why didn't he kill because when he meets
also that was when he killed his uncle. You're right, not the Riddles yet, not the Riddles yet. I think
yeah, he does.
Kill oh, the he killed the Riddles. Oh yes, he killed the Riddles.
Yeah, he kills the Riddles. He doesn't kill his uncle.
Oh yes, he just messes up his memory to make it look like he killed
them. He did it. Yeah, yeah. And I actually, before reading, I had I'm like, oh, why didn't he kill his uncle? Because he seemed really disgusted by him. Like, you know, like, is this where I really come from? Mm-hmm. Like, my father's side is nothing to talk about, but my mother's side is also like this. Then I'm like, wow, this boy was already thinking ahead. How old is he at this point? Is he 16?
17. 16, because 17 is when they become of age.
He's still under the under the age secret, the magic or whatever. Continue, sorry.
Oh no, I was just gonna say, if you had no more points about this chapter, I was just gonna speak to your point, to your question about Dumbledore. Mm-hmm. Definitely, this is why I wanted to link it to Fantastic Beasts. I like, as much as the Fantastic Beasts series has unfortunately fallen off the wayside and is probably going to be irrelevant going forward as a series, I do like the Dumbledore portrayal in terms of actually showing the puppet mastery that we kind of see become more obsessive as we get to his older age, because you see, especially in the latest movie, I watched it, I didn't enjoy it, but I just watched it because I was curious to see how they would, and you know, play out the story, and he's sort of putting pieces together, but people that are being put in these places don't understand what's going on, but he understands what's going on, or he understands what the outcome will be. But okay, the people that are involved, your Newt Scamander, the other people, they don't always understand what's going on. So it's like he's always been that type of person, but the more care he has for the people that are involved in his scheme, then maybe yes, he might feel conflicted about, you know, putting Harry in. He said it perfectly in book 5 when he was like, you know, you were the flaw in the plan because I was just supposed to have you be there as a weapon that I'm getting ready for the final battle, but you then were somebody that I ended up caring for. So it's unfortunate that he definitely still was the puppet master to that degree, but you can also see some of that empathy come through, or that, can you call it love? I don't know. But I guess respect as well, or just nature, I don't know. I'm not sure how to describe it. I've got thoughts on Dumbledore that I've written down, but we'll have to talk about it like when we are wrapping up the series, I think, when we said we'll do that. But I just, yeah, I just think he probably feels the burden of like caring for the people that are part of this puppet mastery thing that he has, but also just needing to know that he executes that final plan. I'm not sure what other thoughts you have. Yeah, so what were your points to speak on that one?
So are you saying that the Dumbledore in Fantastic Beasts is a true depiction of what Dumbledore is like in the books, that you can see the progression of this man throughout the film and to the Harry Potter film?
I can see it.
Or link him to the books.
I can link him. I feel like we would have needed to see up to that final. I don't think we'll get it now because the returns on this movie were kind of low. So it kind of would depend on how much sway JK has and how much money the Warner Brothers wants to sink into this franchise. But you can see it a little bit. You can at least connect the Dumbledore we know was conflicted leading up to his fight with Grindelwald, and sort of like having that opposition of like wanting to fight Grindelwald, but obviously knowing that he's someone he cares for. Mm-hmm. And then equally us as the book readers who have experienced the Dumbledore of old, in terms of when he's older and he's, you know, at that point where he's kind of maybe become ruthless, you can not necessarily see ruthlessness, but you can see how Dumbledore keeps secrets from people. Because the Fantastic Beasts, in the Fantastic Beasts series, I think they end up finding out about the weird bond that him and Grindelwald have, but it's kind of like not fully revealed as to what that bond is. And he still keeps secrets. He's still very in the background kind of thing. So yeah, it's very you can at least link it. And mind you, I just love Jude Law. I just feel so sad that I don't get to have more of him if they cancel this series. Mind you, I don't love Jude Law.
The way you say that.
The actor like that. I just love his portrayal of Dumbledore. Like, oh my God. I was just like, you remember me when the first movie, I was like, oh my God, I'm watching this movie just for him.
When I loved the the Google it said to me reducing noise. That loud.
All right. But anyway, that is it, right, from us?
Yes, that is it. Yeah.
Listeners, join us again for another episode of The Story Never Ends. Bye now.
Chapter 18 is next.
Yes. Oh my God, so excited for that. But yep, see you guys next time.